Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and we are once again talking about how recruiting works, this time with Hampton head coach Vincent Culpepper. Coach Culpepper, thanks so much for joining.
Oh, Terry, thank you for having me. I'm excited to have the conversation with you today.
No doubt. So just for a little bit of context, finished up your first full season as head coach after taking over for Chaz Woodson, and embarked on kind of the second summer of summer recruiting. How do you describe the way in which the transition has felt and how you've developed as you've gotten more comfortable in the big chair?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't hectic. You know, it was drinking from a fire hose, just getting going from being somebody who gives, has suggestions to having to be the decision maker. It's different, and there's a weight there, and also just how quickly I had to go from being the only one on staff hiring, being out on the road. By the time I got my staff in place, it was pretty much September 1. And I think my Rick Matthews, the first thing I did was, here's a list of guys, start calling them. So it was a lot of building the plane while we were flying it. What I was excited about this summer was, we've worked together. We know each other. We know each other, how we work well. We could get on the road and put a game plan together moving forward into this season to be more organized and just to hit the ground running right away this year.
As this conversation progresses, I'm going to try to weave in elements of how your season unfolded and things like that. But I do want to adhere to what is the general format for these conversations, because I do think that there are a lot of people that listen to all of them and kind of like the fact that there's continuity. So I always start with the same question, because when I started doing these interviews, the primary goal was to create lessen what I think is often viewed as an opaque process and make it a little bit more easily understood, specifically for parents. And one of the things about lacrosse that I think is so frustrating for parents is the sport can be evaluated so differently depending on the eye of the beholder, and people value different things differently because of the nature of the game, right? There are 7 positions in men's lacrosse. And one of the things that we all love about it is that, the small, quick guy has just as many pathways to success as the big, strong guy. What that means is that there are a ton of different ways that you can evaluate. So the first question is, how do you describe yourself as an evaluator?
I would have to say, now that I'm a little bit older, I've had some years under my belt recruiting, patient. When I was younger, it was all about, oh, I think this guy's the guy, but I want to see him do this thing, and I want to see him do it right away. And just some sage wisdom from some of my mentors was, hey, Vincent, man, take your time. They will show you who they are. You'll get to see the things that you want to see, or you won't. So kind of take your time in your evaluation process. You have all summer, and maybe a guy does something that you like one time, and it just was happenstance, and he shows his true colors on the back end, or vice versa. So over the years, I've become much more patient in the evaluation process. I think it kind of goes the same as most coaches that I've talked to. You see the guy who looks the part, and that's the first guy you kind of watch, and then you start to settle into the game, and you start to see everybody else, and you get a chance to really start to evaluate different skills, different positions. I think as I've also grown as a coach, we recruit, and I got to give credit to our recruiting coordinator, Coach Burke, who did a great job kind of setting up our process, but more about recruiting in two ways. One is to fit our systems, and the other is, of course, the character of the student athlete. But So being more patient to find the guys that are going to fit the systems that we're trying to run here at Hampton.
Can you just share a little bit about your background as a player, how you got into lacrosse, what position you played, how you describe your own style, and then your pathway into college coaching?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I'm originally from the hotbed of Indianapolis, Indiana. I started playing
Go
back in,
Hoosiers.
yeah, go Hoosiers, baby. I started playing lacrosse in sixth grade. I grew up playing ice hockey, and the middle school I was at, the high school had just got a lacrosse team, and this was back in the early 2000s. So lacrosse was not what it is in the Midwest at this time. There was only like maybe two or three teams altogether. But that high school ended up getting a team, and they wanted a feeder team, so they came to our mid all the middle schools and put us together. And they, I decided to play, and that's kind of how I got into it. And from there, played for 3 years, went on to high school, and I was one of two guys I think that had ever played before. That's how long ago it was. Played 4 years at high school, played a year of Division III at Wittenberg University, and ended up transferring to Indiana. Just kind of wanted a different fit, and that's part of the recruiting process too, is finding the right fit for you. And had an opportunity to play, finish my career at Indiana. And my senior year or my junior year, I was working at the Boys and Girls Club, and I was kind of a little lost. What do I want to do as a career? Where do I want to go with my life? And I got an opportunity to be a gym coordinator, which essentially was a gym teacher, that summer going into my senior year. And now I was like, I want to coach. That's what I want to do. And from there on, that was the path, was getting into coaching. And then to get into college coaching specifically, I sent an email to every Division I coach when I was 24, 25, that just simply said, hey, I'm a young, hungry, passionate coach. I have a dream. The dream is to coach at the highest level. Can I come work your summer camp? And something I tell our men all the time is if you have a dream, you got to get around somebody doing that at a high level. So two coaches got back to me, Coach Tambroni, Coach Bresch. They're both mentors to me. That kind of really opened up my door to coaching. And my first stop as a young assistant was Wabash College in Indiana. And from there, from the connections that I made at camps, I got an opportunity to be a head coach at the Division III level, build a program, and at Karen University up in the suburbs of Philadelphia for a few years, and had an opportunity to join Coach Bresch and his staff as the director of lacrosse operations before the former head coach, Chaz Woodson, took a shot on me to help him build the program here. So I just said, I'm living a dream every day. And I'm excited and happy about that.
It's incredible. And certainly an incredible example for anybody who doesn't know how valuable it is to just take a shot in the dark and send the mass emails and just figure out,
Yeah.
see who responds.
Right.
It is one of life's great lessons. So spinning back to last summer, you described it as building the plane while it was in the air. How do you describe the way that you if continue to evaluate host visits for extend offers and take commitments to the 26s versus then also evaluating the 27s at this time 365 days ago?
Oh, geez, that was a lot, 365 days ago. So I think it's a little different for us, right? Being an HBCU, we recruit every recruitable player. Don't get me wrong, but there's also a player that wants to be at an HBCU that wants this experience, which it does make our pool a little bit smaller. So on September, well, what was September 1 last year, September 9th now, we had an idea of what our pool was and who those guys were. So it was really me making sure that that 26 class, let them know, hey, this is the direction we're moving. You guys are still part of the family. We want you to continue with us, getting in contact with our new coaches. And then on that other side, it was, okay, who do we need to go after hard in order to elevate our roster and in order to, compete in the CAA at a high level. And Coach Burke and Coach Matthews and I sat down and it was a simple conversation. Hey, we're going to go after it right away. And we're going to go try to get the guys that we think are going to elevate this program. And we're not going to sit back and wait.
So it's interesting because by my count, you took 7 commitments in the 26 class from when you took over through last fall. And then I think you took 5 27 commitments before the end of this is out of order. You actually built a much bigger 27 class last fall as well. And that to me is just a unique element of the timing and the timeline, which again, I think is something that, so many parents are interested in. You mentioned the change from September 1st to September 9th. How are you thinking about the pace of outreach to 28s this September, when you want to schedule visits, what you want those visits to be like, how they're going to compare to when you extend offers, and then ultimately how many commitments you hope to get this fall before you kind of shift gears and start focusing back on getting ready for the spring?
Right. We're going to take a very similar approach. We are going to jump into the 28s on September 9th. Like we're sitting down already as a staff. We've been to all the events that we need to be at. We have the pool that we think, we have the pool that we want, and we think we know certain guys that want us as well. And those are going to be the guys that on September 9th we're contacting, and we're setting up visits that week, and we're extending offers right after those visits, because we want to go and we want to recruit just as hard as those top schools out there that can fill a class right in a month. Maybe we don't fill a class in a month, but our goal is to get 2 or 3 of the top guys on our list committed to us, by the end of September, beginning of October. And as far as the visits go, something that I've told our coaching staff is, hey, we're going to have our hands on everything that we can have our hands on. So we tailor our visits specifically to the student athlete that's coming to play for us. They interact with us as coaches, they interact with our support staff, and then they're with our guys. At the end of the day, they're going to be around their teammates and students on campus more than they're probably going to be around us, and more than they probably want to be around us, to be honest. So we want to give them an opportunity to feel what it feels like to be a student here. And then from there, we're extending that offer of, hey, you're, especially for those guys, right? For the guys that may be under that, we're building that list out as well, and we're still communicating with those guys as well. At the end of the day, with everything changing in the NCAA, we're looking at a class that's probably going to be around 8 to 10 guys. Just with the landscape of how things are moving, we'd like to have half the class done, by the end of this first semester.
So you mentioned that by virtue of being an HBCU, there's a little bit of self-selection that goes into that. And I want to dive a little deeper, but we'll come back to that. One of the things that is also kind of a notable hallmark of the program is you've yet to win a Division I game. And one of the things that I really took away from this spring, having watched a handful of your games, is that you're right there, right? Like there's that wall is going to get burst through, and that dam is going to break, so to speak, and who knows what the future holds on the other side of that. But in the meantime, what it suggests is one of the things that you need is builders, you know, guys who are going to be open to hearing and seeing your vision, sharing that vision with you and saying, like, I'm willing to be a part of something that's maybe unseeable right now, but I know what I'm going to be able to contribute to building into that future such that it becomes visible. How do you describe that conversation that you have to have with a 16 or 17 year old?
I guess I'll go to the end of the conversation before the beginning, but the end of the conversation is simple. Who do you want to play you in the movie? Right? We're the greatest sports story that hasn't been told yet. And we're on the, like you said, we're on the cusp of it. But it's identifying, you know, a builder has to be tough. A builder, you know, when you think about somebody who's building something, they got gritty hands, right? They're dirty. They put in a long, hard days of work, get some sleep, and then get up and do it again. You know, there's a grittiness to that individual, and a selflessness. So it's identifying those characters in the guys that we are recruiting. You know, one of the things that's kind of cool though that I'm starting to realize and through this recruiting process is most of the guys that we're going after know each other, right? Because there's just such a small population of black and brown lacrosse players across the board that a lot of these guys know each other. They play together. They're connected. Now we're so connected, right? We got Instagram, we got social media. So these guys are all connected. So it's really the vision is finding those one or two guys that's like, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm about. I'm about elevating the game at an HBCU. And then it's something Coach Burke says all the time to our guys when they say, hey, Coach, we're ready to be Pirates, is, hey, go be infectious. Go be contagious. If the vision's just coming from the coaching staff, that's not enough. But now it's starting to come from the young men that say, yes, I want to be a Pirate. And from the young men that have said, yes, I am a Pirate, and they're going through the actual building of the building process right now.
So one of the things that has always intrigued me about Hampton is, and this may have changed, so I apologize if my DSMA data is out of date, but I believe the Hampton Roads region is the largest media market in the United States that doesn't have a professional sports team. And you and I are about the same age. So, I grew up with, Michael Vick and Allen Iverson thinking that like the best athletes in the country were coming out of Southeast Virginia. And, you know, it's a unique place in terms of the military influence, in terms of the fact that, you know, there's five towns that form one kind of area. And then I've gotten an opportunity to visit a couple times. And the place itself, you know, being right on the water, has a unique vibe. For someone that hasn't been able to visit and just wants to close their eyes and listen to you describe, what's Hampton like?
Oh, man, it's a... Like you said, it's a big region, but Hampton in itself is a small portion of the big region, right? So it's still this intimate feel here. And Hampton University on itself sits right on the Chesapeake Bay, right? So we have a waterfront campus. It tends to be nice here with the breeze. There's usually the sun's out. You know, we were talking in the winter when the sun's out, 55 degrees or so. But it's a melting pot of different cultures because of the military influence here. We have every base that you can have, right? We have an Air Force base, right down the street from us, a Naval base, Army base, and the Coast Guard as well. And that just brings an influx of different people, different cultures, different, types of restaurants, and within just this region, it also brings in a ton of young people. There's Hampton University, Norfolk State University, Old Dominion University, Christopher Newport, William and Mary, and then if you go all the way up to Richmond, right? So that there's just a massive influx in come August through May of college age students. So that makes it even more fun, especially for the men that choose to come play lacrosse here, because they build their relationship with our men, they build their relationships here at Hampton University. But you know, on a on a Saturday we're not doing anything, they can go down to Old Dominion University in Virginia Beach, which is 30 minutes away from us, go to the waterfront. Or if they choose, they stay in Hampton and they go 8 minutes down the road from us and they're at Buckrow Beach. So there's just so many options, so many different things to do here. It's a great place to live, and it's a great place for these young men to grow into their manhood, for sure.
One of the things I'm not sure every listener of this podcast would know is that we designate our star ratings in August before, or this year it'll be early September, before players get recruited. So the decisions are made agnostic of where they end up committing, which means that the class rankings that get informed by them are also reflective. They're similarly agnostic. The star ratings are based on, you know, and I'm getting going on this process right now for the class of 28. You know, we put together a list of 400 to 500 players, and then, you know, we review with college coaches. And the choices are made on the basis of how much demand we expect there to be for those individual players. Right now, Hampton's class in the class of 27 is ranked number 34. In all of Division I, and you have 6 3-star recruits that are the reason that it's ranked number 34. It's a level of success in recruiting that far exceeds anything you've ever had before. You can't talk specifically about the individual players because they haven't signed their NLI yet, but what do you attribute that success to?
Well, first off, it's my staff. It's Coach Burke, our associate head coach. I have a recruiting coordinator. It's Coach Matthews, our assistant coach, our academic coordinator, and it's Coach Carter Collins, our assistant coach, right? Like, it's attacking recruiting. I think there's two major things that you have to attack as a program. One is building culture, and two is getting the guys that are going to be a part of that culture that can play right at the highest level. And we needed to attack the guys that we felt that you and your staff similarly felt, right? Can play this game at a high level. And also, you know, their parents and their guardians have invested a lot in them to go out and be able to learn and get better and play this game at a high level. So we didn't wait. That was our big thing, is we're not waiting. We are going and we're saying, hey, this is the vision. We want you to be a part of this vision. And here's what we can give. Here's what we can do, right? Here's what we can offer. We need to know, because if what I, one of the things that I've learned as a coach, from my mentors again, is it's not the yeses and nos that kill you. It's the maybes. It's the maybes that kill you. Cause if you have enough maybes come signing day the next year, you don't have a class, right? So it was figuring out the yes or the no right away. And then it was moving to the next guy. But, you know, the other piece of that is the young men that have said, hey, I'm ready to be a Pirate. I'm coming to be a Pirate. I'm coming to build a program. I'm coming to help you guys shock the world. They want to do that, but they want to be at Hampton. They want the experience that we have to offer here. And they wanted to do it together. That was very evident. You know, I think it's always, it's, I think it's everywhere, everywhere. You got to get the one domino to fall and then they start to trickle down. We were able to get the one domino to fall. Right. And once that happened, it was like, okay, this is working for us. Let's keep doing it. Let's not sit back.
So yeah. And you had a domino that fell on September 1st and, you know, he was a good player that I think a lot of folks felt like was going to have a lot of options. And it wasn't to say that that meant that dominoes 3, 4, 5, 6 fell on September 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th. But what it meant was that not only did you have proof of concept and somebody else that was willing to, you know, invest in that, but also what must have been so cool for him and for your communication with him was when those subsequent dominoes did fall, like he must have been really validated and really vindicated in terms of the risk that he took. What was that conversation like?
I mean, it was simple. Coach, let's go get him. Let's go. Like, we're going to do this thing, right?
But and, I'm saying, what was the conversation like after everybody else started saying yes?
Oh, it was as simple as who's the next guy? Like, all right, we're not done. We're not done. Now this guy's calling that guy, right? Like, hey, look what we're building here. You got to be a part of this. You got to come. You got to be a part of it, right? And that was the conversation with us as coaching staff was, okay, we're going to keep going. And what we do and what we like to do is, we want our guys to enjoy playing lacrosse here with guys they enjoy playing with, right? So when we see a guy as a coach and we're like, oh, hey, this guy can play. We think he'd be great. We reach out to those guys and say, hey, do you know him? Have you had interactions with him? Right. And a lot of times they have, and they're like, yeah, coach, that's the guy. Or, coach, I don't know. Right. So we lean on our men because every year you get a class that leaves and you get a class that comes in and your roster shifts. So we're shifting our roster to guys that have the same vision, speak the same language, but want to be together and play together.
I want to shift gears a little bit. One of the things that I say when I talk to coaches is that the job that you get is not the job your predecessor had. You have an opportunity through the hiring process in order to be able to negotiate for what you think is the most important thing that you need in order to be successful. So, with that as pretext, how do you describe what your administration has done to support the program that has allowed for some of this success?
Oh, I mean, it's what you just said, right? Like, hey, these are the things that we need to be successful. And all I've heard so far is, okay, let's go do it. And that is, that might be a misconception that's out there, and it has been in the past that, this program's not supported. That's the furthest thing from the truth. Our athletic administration, all the way up to our president, wants Hampton Lacrosse to be successful. And not just Hampton Lacrosse, but Hampton Athletics. There's been a, within our strategic plan of a university, our president put athletic excellence in that strategic plan. I've never been a part of a university that has athletics actually in the strategic plan. Usually it's all about academia and such, which is also super important, right? But there's an investment in Hampton Athletics and in Hampton Lacrosse. And one of the really cool things going back to that 27 recruiting class is, if I could be mistaken, but I don't think I am. But we got our first Hampton legacy player. So his dad was here, and that's been awesome for the program, because now we're starting to. There's a story that can be told, and there's connections that we're starting to make, and it's not the, oh, Hampton's got a lacrosse program. It's not that anymore, right? Now it's like, oh, how are we going to elevate Hampton's lacrosse program? Because once you're a Hamptonian, you're always a Hamptonian. So there's a lot of support that's coming our way, and there's a massive buzz about Hampton lacrosse right now.
One of the things that I am very interested in your perspective on is how, and you can look at this through the lens dating back to your playing days, but then also through your coaching tenure as well. How do you describe the way that the diversification of the sport has created more fertile ground for Hampton to find good players or anything along those lines? And just, two anecdotes that I would share. I've said on a prior podcast, I was actually talking to Ryan Danahy about the role that Atlanta metropolitan area was going to play in why there were so many more black lacrosse players coming up through the ranks than previously. And the reason is because, well, there's a lot of reasons, but the two that I identify as being the most important are, the Atlanta region is the second largest concentration of middle-class black Americans in the U.S. And then the second thing is, relative to the largest, which is PG County, the rate of new high school building is a little, whatever, it's just not there's bigger high schools. And what that means is that if there's only a 25-man baseball team and, you know, however many guys are running track, like, there's just going to be more athletes in the spring that are looking for something to do. And then when you infuse that with high-quality coaching, because a lot of people want to live in Atlanta because it's a really exciting place, you're going to get the alchemy that we've seen. And then the second anecdote is that over the course of the period from, and again, I wrote this a handful of years ago, so I might be misremembering the dates, but when the NCAA started publishing their demographic data survey, which I believe was 2012 or 2013, through, I want to say the last time I updated the numbers was in 2021, the sport had gotten 40% more diverse over that period of time. Now, it's not to say that the numbers are huge. I think it went from probably about 3% of college lacrosse players being black to somewhere in the neighborhood of like 5.5%. But that's still, almost doubling, right? That's like a really substantial factor. And there are a lot of other factors that go into it as well. When Nation United, the kind of all-star club team started playing, I believe their first season was in 2016. One of the goals was, we want to create an experience in which we're not, the one or two or three players on our team, who come from a minority background. And, I feel like in many ways that cause has been, certainly not completed, but now there are, more guys that have experiences organically where, they're not the one, two, three, or four guys on their own team. How has all of that swirled up into, what aspect of the ability to identify your next recruits that might be a little bit more predisposed to come into an HBCU has factored in? And how do you identify the causes of it?
Oh, man. Well, first thing I'll say is we love Atlanta, to be honest with you. We love Atlanta as a program, but there's a ton of Hampton graduates that are in the Atlanta area. Right. I think it's some of what you said, of course. Like, there's bigger high schools, there's less opportunities. And then there's also there's exposure to this sport now that wasn't happening when I was growing up, when you were growing up, right, with social media. So now, black and brown kids are able to be on their phone and they might see a lacrosse clip. And then they're also going to see a lacrosse clip of, guys that look like them that are playing this game. And they're like, hey, that looks really cool. Like, it's kind of like basketball and football and all these sports put together. And it's not in a season that I normally have something I'm doing. Why not try this sport out? And then I think the blueprint was Nation United for sure. Hey, it's possible. And that is giving, I'd almost say that us as a program are an extension of that now. And the experience of those they're young men now, but the young kids then, that was an experience that up until that point really hadn't happened. And a lot of those guys, as they went off, so it was, for those that didn't know what Nation United was, it was young black and brown players from all over the country that came together to play in the club circuit. But then they would go back, right? I think that was part of it too. So they would go back to their regions and be able to influence their regions and say, hey, maybe I'll go talk to my buddy here to come play. And now we got 3, 4, 5, 6 guys on the team playing the game. And then those guys also are now had that experience. They're like, hey, we can have that experience at Hampton, right? We can do that at Hampton now again. And we were pretty daggone good. So let's go be pretty daggone good at Hampton too. So I would say that's been the biggest thing, right? Is just, I think, the exposure to the game and the opportunity for these young people to see the game now is a lot different and is expanding and with opportunities.
One of the things that comes with success in recruiting, particularly getting verbals from good players in the junior class, is you got to hang on to those commitments. How do you describe the communication that you maintain with your guys as they go through their junior and senior year of high school?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're doing a little bit of everything. You know, you're texting guys, you're calling guys, coaches are staying in communication. We like to make sure that our men are communicating with those guys. I think that's probably even bigger than us, to be honest. Like, it's what I said before, that as much as they're going to spend time with us, they want to be with the dudes that are already here. So making sure that those guys are connected. And then it's, you know, we're going, when we get a free moment, we're at a football game or we're at a basketball game. And then giving them opportunities to be together. I think that's a big piece too. So having a junior class visit day together, when they're, you know, before they can sign, so they can be together on the campus with the guys that are here already, with the families, and, you know, building the family, right? The forget about me, I love you is how we define family here. So when you feel like something is yours, you feel like you own it, right? You feel like you want to take care of it. You want to be a part of it. So that's what we try to do, is try to make sure these guys know, hey, this is yours. It's not ours here and you get it when you get here. It's yours. When you say, hey, I'm a Pirate coach, all right, you're in. Here are these other guys that are going to start speaking life into you.
This might seem like a little bit of a left turn, but I feel like I'd be remiss not to ask. So, you know, obviously the tenor of the conversation is around the standing as an HBCU and what it means in terms of the pool of athletes that might be interested. How do you describe the conversations that you have with white players who are interested in potentially being a part of Hampton?
I think at the beginning you start just like anything else. Like, hey, this is what, these are the programs we have to offer. You know, this is what the school is, so forth and so forth. And then when you get into the weeds of things, you're just honest. Like, you know, coming, if you make a decision to come to an HBCU, you're going to be in the minority probably for the first time in your life. Now, what we can tell you is when you sit down in that meeting room with our guys, every single one of our guys knows that feeling, right? So you're going to have a bunch of brothers that are going to be there. They're going to stand with you. They're going to put your arm around you. They're going to walk with you through that process. But it's being completely honest. Like, you got to get here on a visit so you can feel it, taste it, touch it. Right. You got to be able to say, I'm coming here not just to play lacrosse, because it's not going to work. If it's just about lacrosse, you know, it's a situation, and I've seen it where there's something else that, you know, probably better, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's having those conversations, and some of it is I keep going back to this, is like, you know, we get guys that are committed to us and they say, hey, talk my buddy, right? And he might be a white player. And those guys to me are the guys that we go after a little bit harder, just because they have a relationship with the young man already. So they have a buddy coming here to play. I think it's just being honest, saying, hey, this is what the culture of the school is. You know, and it'll be different. They're going to be, you have opportunity to grow in different ways than you probably have. But at the end of the day, if you decide to be a Pirate, hey, you're going to be taken care of by this program.
Who do you want to play you in the movie?
I ask that so much, I've never even actually thought about who I want to play in me. I'm not sure. I'd have to sit down and think about it.
It's a great note to end on. I've got a couple ideas, but I don't want to put any words in your mouth. But Coach Culpepper, we really appreciate your time. It's been great having the conversation. Really excited to watch how Hampton's recruitment of this 2028 class unfolds, and can't wait to get eyes on you in the fall and again next spring as this program continues to build under your leadership.
Terry, I appreciate the opportunity, man, what you do for the sport, and how you support us as a program. It means a lot to us as we're growing and building. So thank you so much for the exposure and being on here today.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.